11 degrees Kenosha, 10 degrees Racine, wind chill minus 9. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really excited about how we're starting today. I get to reconnect with a former voice student of mine from Carthage College. His name is Mike Storman, a very gifted tenor, but someone who has been busy over the last couple of decades teaching in public school. And But the reason we're talking with Mike Storman today is not directly about his teaching career at all or even his time at Carthage, but the fact that on New Year's Eve, he was a contestant on Wheel of Fortune. And this is actually the second time in all my years here at the morning show that I have talked to someone who has been on the Wheel of Fortune. The first time was actually talking to a faculty colleague, a Spanish professor at Carthage, Matt Borden. And today, Mike Storman is going to be telling us about his experience on this show. And of course, as many of you know, if you follow the Wheel of Fortune at all, there is a new host in town. It's no longer Pat Sajak, who was there for so many years, but now Ryan Seacrest is the host. And so we get to hear a little bit of a different perspective on how this show operates and Mike's experience. And because the program has already aired, we don't have to worry too much about spoilers. We're not going to keep secret about how Mike did, and Mike actually did very well that day. But we're really more interested in just kind of hearing about the experience of doing this. And so I appreciate Mike Storman making time in his busy schedule as a teacher and a dad to talk with me on the morning show. Mike Storman, we welcome you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get into the Wheel of Fortune, I do want to get a little bit of preliminary sort of biographical information out of the way. Tell our listeners where you come from originally, what drew you to Carthage, and what you studied at Carthage.
All right. So I was born and raised in Bolingbrook, Illinois, which is actually where I currently reside right now as well. I teach at Romeoville High School in Romeoville, Illinois, right next door. And been doing that for 21 years, roughly, right now. Kind of what drew me to Carthage. Actually, my sister went to Carthage. She's 5 years older than me, which was one reason that I did not want to go to Carthage. I didn't want to follow in her footsteps. But I was pursuing, actually, a zoology. It was the degree that I was looking for. So toured several colleges and looking at specific zoology programs. And always had Carthage on the back of my mind. You know, the campus was gorgeous. I spent several weekends up there visiting her and just kind of kept coming back to it and came down to just the idea that they had a strong biology program. I got to meet with several of the biology professors back then and kind of took it upon myself. I wanted to be a zookeeper, I figured that I could kind of do the biology degree and kind of make it my own through some of the individualized courses there to kind of still pursue that zoology field. And so that's kind of what brought me there. And then obviously the music program helped a little bit too, auditioning for the vocal and instrumental scholarships and being part of the Wind Symphony and Carthage Choir as well kind of helped draw me in a little bit. So that's where I ended up. And then after graduating, I did work at Brookfield Zoo for a short time, both during college and after college. And it was while I was working there that I kind of learned that I really liked just teaching people what I was passionate about in terms of the sciences and decided to go back to school to get my Master's of Education and taught middle school science for 19 years. And then last year and this year, I've made the jump over to high school.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the episode of Wheel of Fortune in which you were a contestant, was in that little banter part at the beginning where host Ryan Seacrest is talking to you, and you kind of explained at least one of the reasons why you felt inclined to make this move from teaching middle school to teaching high school. And it had a little something to do with your own family.
Yes, so I have two boys, 15-year-old Evan and 12-year-old Ian. So it kind of got to the point, middle schoolers kind of are their own beast. And I had been doing it for quite a while, and was just looking for a change. I had been teaching the same curriculum, kind of bouncing back and forth between 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, but most of the time at 6th grade in the same school for, like I said, 19 years. And was just looking for something new. The idea of high school never really was on my mind. But I just needed something new. So I kind of posed to my wife. There was one school that I had gotten familiar with in our district, Romeoville High School. And I just really liked the people there. I always got a warm feeling when I visited for different activities and events. So I told my wife, Michelle, if something were to ever come up there, you know, that would be the one place that I think I might look into going. Within 2 months or so, I received an email that they were looking for a biology teacher. Would I be interested in applying? And I did, and things kind of fell in. So it was just kind of that period of time where, you know, like I said on the show, having taught middle schoolers for so long and then now having two middle schoolers at home of my own, I didn't really get that break. So it was just kind of being around 12 to 14-year-olds 24 hours a day. Got to be a little bit too much that I was ready for something different.
I can understand. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking in this portion of the morning show with Mike Storman, a graduate of Carthage College. And I'm trying to remember now, did you graduate in 2000 or 2001?
2002.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
He was a voice student of mine at Carthage, a valued member of the Carthage Choir. And he has been teaching in public schools for many, many years, recently making the shift over from middle school to high school, teaching biology. And more to the point, we are talking with Mike Storman today because on New Year's Eve, at least the episode that aired on New Year's Eve, featured Mike as one of the three contestants on the Wheel of Fortune. So Mike, tell us a little bit about how this happened. I mean, first of all, have you been a big fan of Wheel of Fortune over the years, and is this a dream that you've harbored for some time?
Yeah, so going back to growing up, like I remember Wheel of Fortune always came on at 6:30. As a family, we would always eat dinner at 6 o'clock. So we'd be wrapping up dinner and Wheel of Fortune would be on TV. And I remember watching it pretty much every day with my parents, but more so my mom was the one who we were always just amazed at how well she did on the puzzles. Then growing up, like I kind of followed in her footsteps, and I did try out once. They had the Wheelmobile in Joliet, Illinois, so my father, my sister, and I went, and didn't end up kind of going anywhere with that. So it's always been something that when it's on, like I love watching it. I do think I'm a pretty good contestant, so I saw sitting on my couch probably like mid-October, and saw a Facebook ad looking for Disney fans that wanted to be on Wheel of Fortune. And if you know me at all, I am a huge Disney fan. The whole family is. That's kind of our go-to vacation spot. Our basement is Disney-themed, decorated. We've got a Disney Christmas tree down there right now. I was like, oh, that's me. So we had just been to Disneyland in March for the first time. So I just uploaded a picture of myself with Pluto. I had my Pluto hat on, holding up the ears right next to Pluto, and submitted like a one-page application kind of saying a little bit about me and why I should be on the show, never expecting it to go anywhere. About 2 weeks later, got an email for a Zoom interview. So I was like, oh, man. So I got like a Disney outfit all ready to go, got my background set up with some Disney photos. Down in the basement, the Zoom audition consisted of myself and I believe three other people, with one of the producers asking us to tell us tell them about ourselves, and that consisted of about 2 minutes, and that was it. So the entire interview for all four of us was about a 10-minute process. So really had no idea kind of what they were looking for or anything like that. And so again, they told us that they would be in touch if they wanted to continue. And then it was about a week later that I got another invite to a Zoom audition. And this one was a little bit more kind of Wheel of Fortune oriented. So they told us kind of to practice, and they suggested that we download the Wheel of Fortune app, which is a fantastic app. That's one of the ways I practice quite a bit. It ended up on this audition was myself and two other individuals, again on Zoom, and they put us into individual breakout rooms with another producer, and one at a time they would bring us into kind of the main room, and they would put four puzzles up on the board that were all part of a category, and they were partially completed puzzles. And so our job was to do our best to both stay animated, and they told us to kind of think out loud as we went through the process and do our best to solve the puzzle. But they wouldn't tell us if we were correct unless we got all four of the puzzles correct that were on the screen. And so that was a little nerve-wracking. I thought I did absolutely horrible. On every screen, I think I knew like one or two puzzles for sure and then wasn't sure about a couple. I remember there was one category that I had absolutely no idea on any of them. And it was just kind of that idea of trying to think out loud, which is very unnatural. That was kind of the end. When time was up, they thanked us for our time and told us that they would be in touch if they wanted to pursue.
And let me just stop you for a second. I just want to get clarification on how these puzzles worked. I mean, what exactly were you looking at, and what was kind of the exact challenge being posed to you?
Yeah, so it was like the screen was split into four quadrants, and each quadrant had one partially completed puzzle. And all four of the puzzles were from the same category.
Mm.
And so it wasn't us calling out letters like it is on the show or anything. It was just us trying to figure out the puzzle based on the information that we were provided.
And it was just static. So it was each of these words, it's not like letters kept appearing. You just had an incomplete word, word with letters missing. And so they were testing your ability to be able to, in a sense, fill in the gaps.
Correct, exactly. And like I said, the challenging part was you thought you were correct, but and normally on the show, obviously if you're correct, they tell you if you're correct. If you're wrong, they tell you you're wrong. But here it was they wouldn't tell you anything unless you got all four of the puzzles correct, which in my case never happened. So after that process, you know, I kind of felt a little defeated that I didn't do as well as I had hoped, just kind of went about things. And it was, again, about 2 weeks later, I remember it quite clearly. We had just picked up dinner. My son, Ian, had asked me, "Dad, do you think you're ever going to hear?" And I was like, "Ian, it's been 2 weeks. I haven't heard anything. I don't think I did well, so I don't really think I'm going anywhere with this." And shortly after dinner, I opened up the email on my phone, and there was an email inviting me to a film date of November 6th in L.A. So it was kind of surreal going from kind of having no hope of moving on at all to saying, right, and at that point it was about 3 weeks out that, all right, in 3 weeks you need to be in L.A. if this is something you want to do.
Wow. So when you engage in this process of, in a sense, applying for a slot, are you at any point, even before you're asked to be on the show, are you, in a sense, asked to commit? That is, if you invite me to be on this show, I will fly out to L.A. and follow through. I mean, is there any written or spoken agreement of that nature even before you get to the point where an invitation is issued?
There was one email where they had reached out, and I think this was probably before they gave the actual date, where they gave a listing of dates and said, would you be unavailable for any of these dates? And I remember November 6th was the first date that was listed, and then I think it went through the month of December. And in my mind, I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to say that I can't commit to anything. Like, I will make it work if you're going to have me on the show. So that's the only real commitment piece, and it was more of a would you not be able to. And I know that in kind of talking to the other contestants that day, there were some people that, because of other obligations, said, you know, I can't do this date. And so then they were actually pushed back quite a ways. But eventually they did get brought back out. So it all worked out in the end.
And when was this that you engaged in this application process and then ultimately heard from them? When was that?
It started probably beginning of October. And then the film date was right up in November 6th, so the beginning of November.
So all of this happened this fall?
Absolutely, yeah.
Ah.
Yep, so it was literally kind of a real quick thing, which apparently is not always the case. And again, talking to the other – so not to jump the gun, I'm not sure if you want me to move forward or just kind of talk as things come to mind. But in terms of the other contestants, their stories were quite a bit different in some cases. So once you're part of the contestant pool, you don't necessarily get a date. It's just kind of like, okay, like we want to have you on the show at some point. And there were some people that got that original email saying like, hey, we'd like you to become part of the contestant pool. And that was almost a full year prior to when they actually came out to film. There was one lady who I remember she had said that she didn't even remember filling out the application, so it had likely been several years since she had done it,
wow.
And then out of the blue got this email kind of bringing her back on.
Interesting.
So I think my kind of quick timeline was actually a little unusual from what I hear.
Right, and maybe it's because you gave them basically a blank check in terms of your own free time that you said,
right.
If you want me, I'm there. We're speaking with Mike Storman, a Carthage grad from 2002, now a high school biology teacher in Romeoville, Illinois. And what we are talking, though, about today is the fact that on New Year's Eve, people all across the country got to watch Mike Storman be one of the three contestants on one of the most popular of all game shows, Wheel of Fortune. So before we hear about you actually flying out there and being on the show, I would love to just hear a little bit about this Wheel of Fortune app. You mentioned as you were talking about kind of the build-up to this sort of second phase of the application process that they suggested that you procure for yourself this Wheel of Fortune app and that it might really be helpful for the preparatory process. Does that app pretty much function exactly like the game show? And how useful did it turn out to be for you?
It definitely helps. It is kind of simulated games where it's kind of you up against these AI competitors, there's puzzles up there and categories, and you spin the wheel. In terms of kind of realism, it's a little skewed, I would say. It's really easy to run the board on the app, where once you get kind of, it's your turn, it's really easy to kind of go through and spin the wheel and get dollar amounts and letters and bivowels, and you can start the puzzle and end the puzzle on your turn. In reality, that's a little more challenging when you've got two living people kind of competing against you trying to get their money as well. But it definitely did help. There's definitely some patterns to words and patterns to categories that you can pick up on. I'm drawing a blank, of course, on the categories. Like for some of them, you know, if there's an N and a G up there, then do you want to buy the letter I, because that's probably likely going to end in ing, and so just little things like that, little kind of nuances, I guess, that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but kind of doing it over and over again, you kind of pick up on.
Great. So, as we've already said, you get this message, and I forget now, was it an email, a phone call? I you told us, but I forgot.
Everything was through email. Yeah.
Email.
Everything was digital. Yep.
So you received this email saying that that you are that they want you to be a contestant on Wheel of Fortune, and in just a couple weeks into the future. So if it's not too personal a question, were you responsible for getting yourself there and for paying for yourself to get to wherever you had to be to do this taping?
Yes. So that is actually one of the kind of the interesting things, is the entire time they're sending you these emails inviting you to be out, there's a disclaimer at the bottom of every single one saying that attending the taping does not guarantee that you will be selected to be on a show. And so it's obviously a little nerve-wracking kind of seeing that. But yes, you are responsible for your own transportation to Los Angeles. You're responsible for the hotel. You're responsible for transportation from the hotel to the studio. So they were nice enough to give us the Sony rate at the hotel. So so in terms of the actual cost of lodging, it was quite reasonable for being in LA. But everything else was kind of put back on us. And then there was some compensation included that if you were to make the trip from out of state and not end up being a contestant on the show, I believe you would have been kind of reimbursed $750. And then if you do make it on the show, kind of their house minimum is a $2,000 that you would have received. Wow. So there was a guarantee of some kind of compensation, but it was up to you to kind of fund everything to get out there.
Wow. So even though you are invited to fly out, that is not an absolute guarantee that you, in fact, will be on the show. And do they clarify how long you're going to be out there? I mean, are they asking you to be out there for 1, 2, 3 days?
Yeah, it's just a one day taping.
Ah.
So the day that I was out there, they actually filmed 6 episodes. So we were there all day long, but that was kind of the only obligation. So my family actually came with me out there. I actually have a friend who was on the show several years ago, and so I reached out to him when I found out and just kind of took his input on whether I should bring my wife and boys out with me. And his perspective was, like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So if you have the opportunity for them to go with, absolutely bring them with. So the four of us did make the trip out there, but we got there on a Tuesday afternoon, did a few hours of sightseeing, and then Wednesday morning I had to be up and at the studio by 6:45 a.m., and then the sixth show taped, and we probably left the studio roughly 6:15 p.m.
Wow.
So it was a long day, but it was a pretty amazing day. So
when you arrived then early that morning, what did you know about what was going to unfold? And I assume that even at that point, was it still not an absolute certainty that you were going to be appearing on camera?
Correct. So there wasn't a whole lot that we did know. We did have one Zoom meeting with people that were filming that week. So we were able to kind of see some faces of the producers and some of the other contestants, but we were not allowed to kind of intermingle with any of the contestants prior to arriving at the studio. So that was a question that came up on our Zoom was, could we kind of ride share together to get to the studio? And we were specifically told that no, we were not allowed. It was quite strange kind of being in the hotel lobby that morning at 6:30 on a Wednesday. There's not a lot of people there, and especially not a lot of people kind of dressed up like they're heading to a game show. And so there were three of us that were standing in the lobby all waiting for our individual rideshare vehicles to take us to the exact same place. But we were not allowed to share rides together. And so when we got there, we actually kind of hung out in the parking garage. That's where we had our little meetup and got to talk to each other. And that's when we found out that there were 21 people that were invited out there to film 6 shows. So there would be 18 contestants and 21 people there. So three of us would have ended up being alternates, which would just mean that they get kind of tossed back into the contestant pool hopefully brought back another time.
Ah, okay.
So we still didn't know who were the alternates versus who was actually going to be on the show, but we did know that there were going to be three people that wouldn't make it on.
Right. What were you told to wear?
So that's pretty interesting. It's pretty strict, actually. So we were told heading into it that we were going to be filming kind of a New Year's themed show. And that if we wanted to wear kind of something extra special since it's New Year's themed, we were welcome to do that. But we had to take pictures of ourselves in at least three outfits and email them to the producers ahead of time. And then their wardrobe people kind of viewed all of our photos, and they responded to us with which of our outfits they wanted us to wear that day. And then we also had to bring another outfit as an alternate just in case something happens, obviously, if we spilled something, or once we're under the cameras with the kind of the 4K, sometimes the like if there's a pattern or something, it shows up weird on the camera. And so there were a couple people that they asked to change their tops or put a jacket on or something like that. So it was pretty specific in terms of what to wear. We had to wear, they suggested darker colors, solid patterns, no small patterns. But ultimately, they were the ones who chose of our outfits which ones we were going to be wearing on air.
Interesting. And I don't remember real specifically, but I know you were not in a suit. It seems to me you were maybe wearing a sweater. I mean, you looked really nice, but not like dressed to the nines.
Correct. I had a dress shirt and a tie with a sweater on over the top of it. So the one I thought about wearing a suit. My kind of fear was having a jacket or a tie dangling while I leaned over to spin the wheel. I didn't want any mishaps there, so I opted for the sweater over top.
Very good. So so you arrive, it's early in the morning. Tell us kind of what the holding pattern was. I mean, where did all of you end up gathering and spending most of your time, especially early on?
Yeah, so once we kind of went through security while in the parking garage, and then they walked us down to kind of a holding studio, I guess. It was a studio that ended up being right next door to where Wheel of Fortune was filmed. But it just seemed kind of like an empty warehouse. After kind of talking, we did find that was where the TV show Goldbergs was filmed, is where kind of we sat around. But it was just tables and chairs set up. They had a kind of a little makeup studio set up in there with the makeup people. And the first people that came and talked to us, they called themselves the Game Show Cops. And we had about a 15-page contract that they went through us page by page, basically telling us what we weren't allowed to do. There's not really much that we were allowed. it was a lot of kind of, you know, what we couldn't tell people in terms of what we won if we made it on the show. They did say that we could potentially tell people that we were going to be on the show, but they hesitated for us to do that because they said that's always followed up with the question of how did you do, and it just makes it a lot harder to keep the secret. Kind of, I guess it all stems back to in the 1960s, I believe, there was kind of a game show issue where the game shows would kind of find people that would be good for ratings and just constantly bring them back on the show to kind of help things out. And kind of rig the shows. And so it all stems back to that it is now a federal crime to cheat on a game show. And so as he told us that if word were to get out that we've kind of made it so that people didn't have a reason to watch the show, that they would sue us for more than we would ever win on the game show. So it was a little kind of unnerving to have somebody tell you that. So that was kind of the first thing. We at some point in the morning, and I don't remember exactly the order, while we were sitting in there, somebody walked in while we were kind of listening to a presentation that nobody really recognized, knew who it was, and it ended up being Vanna White.
Oh.
So she came in her little sweatsuit, no makeup on, anything like that, and it wasn't until she started talking that we kind of all realized who was there saying hi to us. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then we did go down to the studio at that point for just kind of a practice. So that was kind of our first opportunity to actually see the stage and see the wheel and all of that. And they had us all go up on the little risers and practice spinning the wheel and calling out letters just so that we could get a feel for it, which the wheel is very heavy. I don't remember exactly how much. The number that I heard at some point was 2,400 pounds. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but it does take quite a bit of muscle to get that thing around. And so at that point, we still didn't know if we were going to be on, but they did have us just kind of stand in one of the locations, one of the colors up on stage, and each of the steps are actually hydraulic risers. So they would set our height at that point, just whether they knew who was going to be on or not, I'm not sure. But it was just kind of a quick run through.
Fascinating. So that's why the contestants, generally speaking, look to be roughly the same height. I mean, so
correct.
Even if someone is, one is 6 foot five and the next is 5 foot six, with these hydraulic lifts, then there will be at least a rough equalization. That's fascinating.
Right. And one of the questions that has come up to me several times is how short is Ryan Seacrest? And because of that, I can't really tell you. I mean, obviously, at one point he was standing next to me, but I wasn't really focused on how tall he was. So I really don't know off the top of my head how tall he is. So.
Right. Interesting. So at what point, roughly, did you get the word that you were going to be one of the lucky 18 contestants who would actually get to appear on camera that day?
So shortly after the practice, we went back and had some breakfast, and then it was then that they called people out show by show and just said kind of who was going to be on which show and who you were going to be competing against. And so for me, it did happen. I was going to be on the third show of the day. So the day was split into two tapings, the morning that started at around 11 o'clock, and then the afternoon that started around 3 o'clock. And so I was the last episode of the morning session. And it was me with Elizabeth and Tish, who were the two people that I practiced that morning with as well.
Ah, so interesting.
Makes it kind of seem that they had some ideas going into it, that who was going to be up there with each other, and that practice was kind of their just visualization to make sure everything was going to play out the right way.
Right. And I've always kind of wondered about that, if how much of that sort of pairing up, of grouping of three contestants, how much of that is quite capricious? I mean, pretty much random, pretty much chance. I mean, sometimes it's three women, sometimes it's three guys, sometimes it's a mix, probably most often a mix, but just at least to a casual observer, there does not seem to be a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. Did they give you any hint whatsoever of how these groupings of three contestants get put together?
Not at all, no. Mm. When we were in for the practice, we were just kind of standing in a little semicircle around the wheel, and they would just randomly call out names and have us go up and tell us which color to stand on. And that was about it. And I think for most people, it did end up being who they went up for practice, but I believe there was one or two of the kind of the groupings that were a little bit different. So I'm not sure if they made some changes on the fly, but it was an interesting time.
So once the taping is underway and there are two episodes being taped before it was your turn, were you someplace with the other contestants to come watching these episodes that were filmed before yours?
Yes. So the audience is kind of split into three sections. It's all one side. So obviously the cameras are all from one side when you watch the show. And so with that side, there's kind of three sections of seating. The far left section is for family and friends of the contestants. The middle section is just kind of everyday people that obtain tickets for the taping. And then the far right section is the contestants and then the producers sat over there as well. And so that's something we were specifically told, that we were not to have any communication or contact with our family or friends from the moment we walked in the studio until after we had filmed. And as they said, that once we break the bubble, we're not allowed back in.
Interesting.
So once that communication happens, then we are now a spectator and a regular citizen, no longer a contestant.
Interesting.
So that was pretty challenging, knowing that my wife and boys were a couple hundred feet away and I couldn't even look at them and acknowledge them or anything.
Wow. How much did you end up talking with the two women who ended up taping with you the New Year's Eve episode ahead of the actual taping? Do you feel like you got to know them better than some of these other contestants with whom you did not appear at all?
A little bit. But I would say it was more kind of just the big group. When we were situated in that other studio, it was table set up with two chairs. And so I happened to be seating with a gentleman who was actually on last Thursday's show, Brandon. So he's probably the one that I got to know the best out of anybody, just because I spent all morning sitting next to him, talking to him. So, I mean, obviously, like, when you're in kind of the green room prior to your taping, when you're getting the makeup and things, it's just you and the two other contestants that you're on there with. So you do get a chance to talk with them a little bit more. But I wouldn't say that we spent the day together or became best friends or anything like that. So.
So, finally, it is time for your taping. Do you have an idea of how much space there was between each of these? Well, I mean, there were the three in the morning and three in the afternoon, but between, for instance, the three episodes taped in the morning, how much time was there between each of those episodes?
So, it was roughly, that's what we were trying to figure out. I would say they told us that it would be the fastest 21 minutes of our life. So, the actual show itself is about 21 minutes long, and it probably took about 45 minutes, I would say, from the time that they originally started the cameras rolling until we were totally done. But it's very similar to what's on TV, other than there's a few times where they would have Ryan Seacrest kind of retape something, or things that happened that they edited out, and things, nothing major, but just some different endings to kind of the commercial breaks and that sort of a thing.
So that's interesting, because I mean, in some ways it feels like exactly what you're used to watching on TV, and yet of course it's not unfolding in quite the same way. How nervous were you, particularly right at the outset and as this game was being played? How nervous were you, and were you as nervous as you expected to be?
Yeah, I was pretty nervous. I mean, I was a theater kid growing up, and kind of all through high school, I did Fiddler on the Roof at Carthage as well. And so in terms of the lights and cameras and things like that, that wasn't really it. I was more nervous about making a fool of myself, or just not performing up to my ability, I guess. So that first kind of when Ryan came out and clapping and getting ready for that first toss-up puzzle, like I was pretty unnerved. But after I did end up getting the first toss-up puzzle correct. And so once I got that, I knew, all right, I'm on the board. I'm not going away empty-handed. And then things kind of calmed down a little bit. But it's still pretty much just a giant blur of everything that happened. So.
I should think. Well, and I don't want to get terribly specific here, but I think it's fair to say that one of the other contestants in this episode made one of those mistakes that one would hate to make when on national television. I mean, when a puzzle has just two letters remaining to be figured out, and they happen to be the same letter, and it seems, at least from the easy comfort of one's living room, it's like nobody could possibly miss that word, and yet somebody did. And I'm sure that's exactly the kind of thing you most dread going into this.
It is, and that was one of the really challenging, kind of morally challenging things about this is, like you mentioned, like I've spent all day with these people, and we want to see everybody go home successful, but at the same time, like when those puzzles were up there and I knew it, and it was on the red person, and I was blue, so two people over, I'm kind of hoping that they make those mistakes and that it gets back to me so that I can win. So that was difficult. Just kind of, you know, I want to see them do well, but at the same time, I want to be the winner. I'm a pretty competitive person. And so when I knew the answer, I really wanted to get it. but in terms of the puzzle that you're talking about, do you mind if I say what the puzzle
sure,
was?
Sure, go ahead.
So the correct answer, it was a before and after, was ebb and flow chart. And when it was my turn, I had in my head that first word was I, and I knew it could not have been I because the E was already up there, but for some reason I could not get that word out of my head. And so I was just kind of stuck on it. And like you mentioned, it was a relatively easy word with it being ebb, but like just one B and you had the rest of the puzzle. But it was just kind of that mind freeze that I couldn't get past the wrong word.
Right, there you go.
That made it pretty challenging.
Absolutely.
And that's one of those things that I think kind of when you are under the spotlight with the pressure there, that something that seems so easy when you're sitting on the couch at home, like your mind does kind of do some strange things when you're up on that stage.
Of course. Are you in a position, I mean, do they show on some kind of screen what letters have already been guessed?
Yes. So kind of the position of the contestants and the wheel, you're facing pretty much directly at the letter board, kind of the green board with the phrases that Vanna turns the wheels. And then up, kind of off to the left at the top, there is the used letter board. And that is every letter that's guessed goes up there, as well as kind of the running tally of the scores for the three contestants are up there as well.
Mm.
So you do, and if you watch the show, like now watching, you'll see people constantly kind of glancing up to the left. And now I know why, because they're looking to see what letters are still available or which ones have already been guessed.
Interesting. We should also mention, again, not to dwell on the negative, but one of the other contestants also makes a really unfortunate mistake, and it is a mistake of pronunciation. I mean, they seem to think they know the word, and yet the word they say is not that word. It's not the word that it is. It's related. I mean, it sounds somewhat the same, and yet that's not the word. And you know, again, the kind of mistake one hates to make on national television. Well,
right.
Mike, you do actually very, very well. And again, because this is already aired, I don't think we have to be terribly coy about just how well you do. What you are really the most successful at are these, I forget what they call them, but where letters pop up one at a time, and then the first person... what is it?
Toss-up puzzles.
Okay. And you got most of them, almost all of them, through the course of this episode, which was really cool. And I should think you look at that with great pride.
I do, yeah. I've kind of, like I said, I've gone back and rewatched just to see if there was something I could have done different. And I believe I got five of the puzzles that day correct. So I think four of them were toss-up puzzles and then one of the other regular puzzles as well. So I'm pretty happy with how I did. Obviously, wish the outcome would have been a little bit different. But
right. So you, as we can tell our listeners, that you end up coming in second. But you are just in second. I mean, it's a distance of, I think, $200 between you and the person who ultimately is the top winner in that episode. And if anything seems to have been your downfall, it was in something that actually most contestants do, and it's usually a very good strategy, and that is the buying of vowels. And you ended up buying unhelpful vowels over and over again, unfortunately.
Right. And that is... one of the things that they actually encourage you to do, they being the producers, throughout the day, is they just kind of stress to you the importance of vowels and solving puzzles, and that if you're ever not sure about something, buy a vowel, because that might help. And so that's kind of the strategy I fell back on, and it ended up being my demise that day, losing by 200 and vowels costing $250. So it was a tough pill to swallow at the end. But I will say I have rewatched the episode, and I believe that on the puzzles that I incorrectly guessed a vowel, those are puzzles that I also did not win. So in my defense, that actually didn't ultimately have an impact on the final outcome. It kind of went back to what you alluded to before with the mispronunciation of the puzzle. Because she mispronounced the answer, it fell to Elizabeth in yellow, who then was able to get it, and that happened to be a prize puzzle, which allowed her to get the extra money for that trip to St. Martin, I believe.
Mm.
And that ultimately is what put her ahead of me, was because of that.
Wow. Yikes. That's all it comes down to sometimes. And yes,
right.
it as I watched this, it was really... It clarified for me something that I suppose on some level I've long known, which is that, yes, there is skill involved in Wheel of Fortune, and yet it's not just skill. It is also a game of luck, and part of it is what happens when you spin that wheel. Now, in that respect, you were pretty fortunate. That is, I don't ever remember you through the course of the episode, unless I'm wrong. I don't remember you hitting a bankruptcy or whatever whatever it is that you don't want to get on the board. I mean, at least by and large, wheel was kind to you.
It was. I did have dollar amounts every time. If that last spin that I made, the final spin would have been about $50 more, then the outcome would have been a little different. But I was the only one, I believe, that didn't get a bankrupt that taping. So I am thankful for that.
Right. Well, I don't think we have to get too specific about how much money you won, but let's just say it was, if you don't mind me saying, it was thousands of dollars. And, I mean, a nice, substantial piece of change. Looking back, how did that sort of align with what your hopes and or expectations were? I mean, going into this, I mean, were you just kind of blithely assuming that you would be the triumphant victor, or did you know enough about this game going in to know that there's no way to know just how well you're going to do?
Yeah, I really didn't have many expectations at all. I was kind of in it for the experience. Like I said before, it was something I've watched for most of my life, and so just having the opportunity to be on the show and meeting Ryan Seacrest and Vanna White, that's kind of what I was there for. In terms of hopes, I was hoping to make enough money so that I could kind of pay myself back from bringing the family out to LA. And so as long as that was kind of covered, I would have been satisfied. So I was pretty happy with the outcome.
Well, I certainly think you should be. And I want to mention, too, that I remember when you spun the wheel for the first time. Of course, there's this thing where everybody claps. I mean, I'm not sure why everybody claps, because obviously that has no effect whatsoever on the wheel. But everybody claps. And I distinctly remember one of the contestants saying, "Come on, Mike," or "Way to go, Mike," or something. But we had this sense that the three of you, for as much as you were competitors with each other, seemed to be cheerfully, warmly cheering each other on.
Absolutely. So that's one thing that you don't get by watching the show is we obviously all have microphones on, and I think we all did that in terms of kind of encourage each other and cheer for each other when they were successful. But obviously the producers have control over what gets aired and what doesn't. So they did cut a lot of that out. But between, during commercial breaks, while everybody else is watching the advertisements, there would be times where Ryan would come over and kind of have conversations with the three of us. So I know that's always a question of is he as nice of a guy as he appears? And absolutely, he is fantastic. He's a great host. Obviously, no Pat Sajak in terms of kind of the historical aspect, but I think he has done a great job to kind of turn this over to the younger generation of people. Kind of pulling in his American Idol crowd and things. But he absolutely did seem like he had a true interest in each of us and kind of had those conversations. But then there was always a time where he got pulled away to find out what the next puzzle was going to be. And it was at that time that the producer would bring the three contestants down and give us a bottle of water and kind of tell us what the next category was going to be, ask if we had any questions, and that was kind of our time to, you know, talk about the last episode, be it for 30 seconds or whatever the time was. But there is definitely that feeling of camaraderie amongst the three of us, even though we are competing.
Mm. Well, Mike, I was just as pleased as could be to see you do so well, to present yourself so well, and it was just really, really exciting to see a smiling, familiar face on the screen. And we encourage people who have the means to look up this episode if you missed it. It's the episode that aired on New Year's Eve, and one of the three contestants, Mike Storman. Mike, it was great to talk with you. Thank you for doing such a great job of telling the story of your experience on Wheel of Fortune, and best wishes to you and your family, and thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, one of our most noteworthy author interviews with Craig Unger, discussing his best-selling book, Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason that Stole the White House. That's tomorrow on the morning show. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today, sunny and windy with a high of just 15 degrees, overnight low of 2 above. Tomorrow, under sunny skies, we warm to a high of 22. And by Thursday, a high of 36 degrees, and we'll even see the low 40s for a daytime high on Friday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake.